Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 191 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of March 2nd, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is surfing gorilla Dan Ryan.
I am a surfing gorilla. I love TNC surf design and beer and wrestling.
It's time for the 10-20-30, so we've got that, but it's also a script that I'm going to ignore. So we're going to be jumping over that as well. Before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us, that's me, Chris Randazzo, at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of the show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello because we always want to hear from you, the listener. Now, Dan Ryan, that's you.
Yes, Chris.
Yes, I am Chris. I'm going to be playing the role of Chris tonight because Chris's computer has completely shut down because Comcast is literally the devil. So
I can't do this as you, Dan. I have to do this as me because that's my rage for Comcast. I am sitting here on my freaking phone Skyping into this thing. I'm recording on my computer, which is working just fine, but the internet shit the bed, right? Put the kids to bed. Karen and I go downstairs like, all right, we're going to watch the new episode of Top Chef, or at least some of it before we go downstairs and do the show, because I like Top Chef, motherfuckers, all right? I like Top Chef. I think it's a great show. So we're sitting down, go to use Top Chef. We open up the Bravo TV app. No dice. Connection error. Okay, fine. We'll switch over to cable. Cable, still, no dice. I just won't load up on demand because Comcast. So I call up Comcast. They're like, hey, internet's down in your area, but it will be fixed today by 11:59 p.m. It's like, well, that does me a whole heck of a lot of good. Thank you, Comcast, for your awesome service. And they even say in the automated message, if you want to stay on the line, you can talk to a representative, but they won't be able to help you. I appreciate the honesty.
I mean, you can talk to one of us. We're just going to tell you to fuck off. But, I mean, see, and I think you're actually doing a very good job playing me because you said fuck before I did. You're me.
Wow. This is bizarro world here.
Unprecedented, Chris. Unprecedented.
Comcast brings it out in me, Dan.
Well,
brings it out in me.
You're not wrong, though. I mean, there might not be a company worse at their job than Comcast. Like, your job is to provide internet and cable television services, and I suppose phone for old people, but they're so bad at it. Like
they really are.
They're just, I mean, it's horrendous. And for those of you who are listening who do not know the delicate pleasure that is the exquisite hell of having Comcast as your ISP, it really, like, there are no words to do it justice, right? I mean, like, it's so bad.
I swear to God, this is hilarious. My internet's back. It, like, just in the middle of you saying that, I got an email like, whoa, wait a second. I just clicked on Facebook and my internet's back. I'm not going to trust it because, I mean, it could just crap out at any minute. But,
yeah,
my internet does appear to be back. So that's something.
No.
Go team.
So bad. So bad. And it's really, like, the customer service aspect of it. Like, you can stay on the line to talk to one of our representatives, but they will not be able to help you. Like, wow, man. Like, wow.
And like I said, I do appreciate the honesty, because it's like, look, there's an outage. We can't help you. But at the same time, do you really want to be like, we can't help you?
It's your job to help. It's your job to help, man. Just help. Anyway, how you doing, Chris?
Anyway,
apart from this,
I'm doing pretty well. I'm really really very excited for what we've been playing episode, because boy, yeah. I've been playing some stuff, man. I have been playing some stuff.
I figured since I knew that was coming up, I would just stop playing games altogether. That way, I had nothing to contribute.
I will just, as a quick little something, just because I have to announce the accomplishment, Karen and I beat Overcooked last night.
Nice.
the last boss in that game was really tough, that last level. And we were playing it with the kids in the room, which is always a bad idea because they're like crawling all over you and it requires crazy concentration. Yeah, so like last night before we recorded this week's episode, Karen and I decided to give it one more shot and we just annihilated the stage. Just absolutely working like a well-oiled machine. I was very proud of us. We three-starred it and it's great. So we three-starred the entire main game except for the last two levels before the boss. Those we only got two stars on. So we're not sure if we're going to go back to those, but there's two DLC packs included in the Overcooked Special Edition or whatever it is on Switch. So we still have a bunch of new levels to play past the boss.
Well, all right then. I had a relative accomplishment as well on the Japanese Puzzle and Dragons server. They were doing a bunch of events leading up to the sixth anniversary of the game, which happened on I think February 19th or 20th last week. And with the events that they were doing, they put out a bunch of different ranking dungeons. Now, the highest I've ever gotten in the American ranking dungeons was like 36% or something like that, you know. So, and not great, certainly, but not terrible. But the Japanese player base is way better and bigger. Like, the numbers are just, it's really not even comparable. But in one of the tournaments leading up to this event, I placed in the top 20%. Of players.
Wow.
And I was like really proud of that for some reason. Like, it's kind of a silly thing to be proud of, but like top 20%, like, and there's people playing this, you know, this thing all over the world, and the Japanese client is certainly much more popular for people outside of Japan than like the American version would be in Japan. You know, so there's a ton of people playing this, and to hit top 20, top 20%, pretty sweet. And it, like, what was cool about it is that it was a fixed team challenge. So like for a long time there was kind of like a gatekeeping aspect of it, of like, well, I don't have these cards, so I'm just not going to be able to get anywhere close to the top, right? Like, if I don't have X, Y, or Z, just can't do it. But this one being a fixed team, everybody had the same cards, no awokens, anything like that. So it was pretty sweet.
Oh, that's a pretty damn fine accomplishment there.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn fine accomplishment.
Oh, a damn fine accomplishment, eh? I'll give you one of my mixtapes that I used to make back in college. A goddamn mix, volume one.
That's delightful.
Oh, it worked like a charm, Chris. Worked like a charm.
Mm-hmm. So, just ask Tiff.
Anyway, we were going to talk about the Nintendo Switch's first birthday, but that needs a whole show, I feel.
It does. I mean, you're right. I'm looking at the notes I took for this, and like, there's a lot to get through.
There really is.
Yeah.
And
it's been a hell of a year. The year anniversary is the day after this episode goes live. This episode goes up on March 2nd, and you know, the Switch launch on the 3rd.
On
but
the 3rd, yeah.
We're gonna chunk that back until next week and just dedicate the show to that. Which means, what was I just saying to Dan? So that means that this week is 10/20/30. Then next week we're gonna talk about the Switch report card. Then the next week we're gonna talk about what we've been playing for the last month and a half. Mm-hmm. And then the next week we're gonna do that Data East episode we were talking about. And then the next week it's already gonna be the end of the month, so we're doing 10/20/30 again.
It's nice to have plans, Chris.
It is nice to have plans. It's nice to not have to think about this stuff all the time.
That's right.
Because I do, anyway.
Because I'm gonna, but it's nice not to have to.
It is nice not to have to. So here's a fun little story before we dive into the 10/20/30 proper. I'm taking the day off tomorrow.
Really?
And,
Rebel.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
You're announcing that on the podcast?
Oh, it's the end of our, I guess, contract cycle.
Mm.
And my time goes away.
If I don't use it. Right.
Yeah, I have use or lose time. So I'm taking a day off tomorrow, and I am working on... I'm going to be selling a bunch of my stuff.
Okay.
At Garden State Comic Fest this year. It's in April. It's in Atlantic City. We have Geekade is going to have a table, and at said table, I'm going to be selling a bunch of my old comics and my old video game stuff. Because now that I know the space that I have for my video game collection,
right.
It is an undisputable fact that I have too much stuff. And a lot of it's stuff that I don't particularly...
It took you buying a house to figure that out?
I didn't know what kind of house we were going to buy. I didn't know if I would have an entire basement to myself or what. I had no idea. I planned for every eventuality. I have too much stuff instead of not enough, and I'm happy with that.
Sure.
But there's a lot of stuff that I have that I have no real connection to. It's just things that I own. And so tomorrow I'm going to be spending the entire day in my garage going through all of my stuff and separating everything that I'm willing to part with. So I'm pretty excited about doing that because it's going to be a lot of fun.
That is pretty exciting.
I mean, this is all kinds of stuff from my years of working in retail. Like, I still have the Viva Pinata pinata. Like,
oh God,
I have no connection to Viva Pinata, but it's an actual pinata from Viva Pinata, so I'll have that for sale. I got a couple of standees. I have a Zelda Twilight Princess standee, which is really cool. I don't have anywhere to put it, so, and it's not in the greatest of shape. It was unopened before, but it also, Hurricane Sandy in my old basement in my old apartment, it did get flooded, so there's a little bit of water damage. Mm. But it does still look very nice. So there's that. I'll be selling that. Most of the stuff I'll be selling for relatively inexpensive. I have a complete in-box Super Metroid, just a spare one, because that's the kind of asshole I am.
Because you're a terrible person.
Well, to be fair, so I have spare boxes. I have spare boxes and manuals from back mm-hmm. when I was working at Funko Land, and they decided they weren't carrying those boxes anymore. They were switching all over to like PlayStation and whatnot.
Right.
So all the boxes for Game Boy, NES, N64 even, like all that kind of stuff. So when they announced they weren't doing that anymore, I drove to all the stores in my district and got as many boxes as I could, and I flattened them all out, and I've been saving them for years.
Right.
And I got tons of great stuff, and I've completed a lot of things that way. So I'm also in the situation where people tend to give me stuff. You know, everyone I know knows I collect games. So if anyone's cleaning their basement and has games, they're going to give me their old stuff. It just happens, and it's wonderful. My cousin Jason, like 6 months ago, he gave me a giant shopping bag full of just a bunch of games. One of the games was Super Metroid. So I cleaned it up, grabbed my spare box, my spare manual, and now I got a spare complete Super Metroid. Yay.
Well, there you go.
So I'm going to finish going through the rest of that stuff and see if I have any other games I can complete. The only two I found so far are Super Metroid and Tecmo Bowl for NES. I have a second complete of that now, which is
that's pretty awesome.
So that's going to be my day tomorrow. And it's going to be so fun. I miss spending time with my collection because I don't really get to do that anymore. I mean, until the kids are old enough where I can have my collection out and on display. Being able to actually spend time, like John's going to be in daycare and my mom's going to be watching my daughter Ellie. So I'm just going to be in the garage futzing with my stuff. And I'm very, very happy about that fact.
Well, that's pretty awesome. If any of our listeners are interested in meeting us at a Garden State Comic Fest and would like to trade me a copy of Earthbound for a non-greatest hits version, complete in case, in a very good shape, of Suikoden 2, I would love to trade that for you, because I tried to make this trade for you, Chris, like years ago, and I never told you. I'll tell you about it now, since it's apparently not going to happen. But I put up things on like trading boards and whatnot, and people were like, there was a couple that came close and whatever, because I know that it was one of the things that you didn't have.
I do have an Earthbound now.
So back then it was one of the things that you didn't have yet. So I was trying to make it happen, but since it never happened, now I just want one. I would never play it. I will never touch it. But if anybody wants to do that, shoot us a message and I will bring you. It's not sealed, but it is a perfect copy of Suikoden 2.
That's awesome.
I tried.
What else is awesome? Earthbound. It's a great game.
Is it?
It is. Weird game. But it's a very, very nice game.
We'll get to that. I'm sure that'll be on one of these shows eventually. So,
yeah, it's to put it short, it's similar to Kid Icarus in that the beginning of it is more of a grind than the end of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like the more you play it, the better it is. And Yeah, that's how I feel about Earthbound.
All right.
So, 10-20-30.
Let's do it.
You ready to do this thing? Let's do this thing. So, for any new listeners out there, the 10-20-30
is a... Why would you laugh at that? We're gaining listeners every week, Chris.
Every day. The 10-20-30 is something we do once a month where we look back at games that were released in a particular month, 10, 20, and 30 years ago. So this week, we will be talking about games released in February of 2008, 1998, and 1988. And I have no idea why I said that like that.
Because you want me to take over hosting the show?
No.
Okay.
I mean, if you must, but...
I am Chris Randazzo.
You am. So let's go. Let's go 2008. I will say straight off the bat, I do not have a lot to say about much of anything that came out in February 2008.
Right. Neither do I. So this will be short. But the other stuff, we certainly have more to talk about.
Yeah. This the back half of the show. There's definitely things to say about. And now this isn't the be all end all list. This was at one point I went through lists of games that came out in particular and in these years, and then I wrote down everything that I thought was important enough to talk about. So
right.
First up, we've got Assassin's Creed Altair's Chronicles for DS. This was interesting because this was, I believe, the first Assassin's Creed that appeared on a Nintendo console.
Mm-hmm.
This was Altair's Chronicles, and that was like Ezio was Assassin's Creed 2, right? That was the one that everybody liked.
Yeah, yeah. The Altair was the first one, I think.
Gotcha.
I'm almost positive.
I'm like 99% sure that is the case. Was this game good? Do you know?
I don't remember it being good, and I'm looking at screenshots now, and it certainly doesn't look good.
Was this it was 3D. Oh boy, yeah. It looks like a PS1 game.
It looks like, it does look like a PS1 game. It does not have, physical controls. It has the digital, analog stick, and I can't imagine it did well. I mean, no, that's not true. I can imagine it did well. I can't imagine anybody was happy with their purchase.
Well, let's see. IGN gave it a 7 out of 10, 6 for presentation, a 7.5 for graphics, 7.5 for sound, 7 for gameplay, and a 4 for lasting appeal.
Mm.
Yikes.
That's not good.
Nah, it's not good, but it's not bad. Like, on a 7 scale, this fits in the good category for an IGN review. Again, I don't know. Let's see, who reviewed this? Is this somebody that I know? Well, not know personally. Oh, this was Craig Harris. I tend to agree with Craig Harris on most things. I thought Craig Harris is a good dude. So I don't know if Craig Harris said it was pretty good. I wonder. I doubt that it's aged very well. Like, this was probably cool at the time. It was probably very novel to have Assassin's Creed on the go. But
I think that's one of the things, like, when we're looking back at these older games and we look at scores and we see what the lasting appeal was, a 4 is not good. Like, that's basically saying that in a year or two this is going to be shit.
Well, what they mean by the lasting appeal is that there's not a lot of replay value. Like, when they say there's it's very short with not much in the way of replay value, so once you're done, you're done. That's what it says on of the review of Lasting Appeal. So it's good for a playthrough, but it's not something you're going to go back to unless you really enjoyed what you already did. What it's saying in the review is that it was a lot more of a structured experience. It wasn't an open world thing at all. It's
right. No, it
so
looks
I
very
appreciate
linear.
That they didn't try to recreate the open world experience on the DS, which clearly couldn't handle something like that.
Right.
So you got to respect them for at least knowing the limitations of the platform. This was clearly a case of, we have this great new brand. The DS is the hottest selling thing on the planet. Let's try to put two and two together.
Right. Let's get something out for it.
Yeah, I'm glad this seemed to have worked well enough.
Well, all right.
Neat.
Yeah,
well, all right. There we go.
I never played it.
Chronicles. Yeah, I've never been an Assassin's Creed fan.
Me neither. Really not.
It's cool. I was kind of... It was cool when it started. and I did not care for it becoming an annualized thing.
Right.
That was, I feel like Ubisoft really Tony Hawked this series and just
they really
like,
did.
Let's crank it out every year. And this isn't the kind of thing, like, this isn't Madden. Like, I feel like this overarching narrative that they had, like, they could have wrapped, you know, had some sort of ending where they wrapped this up with playing in that futuristic world.
Right.
Or, you know, really spent a lot of time between sequels and making them all. Granted, I know a lot of people like every one of the Assassin's Creed games. I, from what I've come to understand, there are no particularly bad ones, but I feel like
the first
series
one is pretty shitty.
Yeah, but it wasn't at the time. The first one was, I give the first one a lot of passes because it was doing something a little different. You know, it was back when some of these companies were okay with attempting to try some new IPs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it did come at the cost of Prince of Persia, but still.
Yeah.
It's I have some respect for the Assassin's Creed franchise. I do wish that it had taken a step back and not released so darn many games, because it just this franchise didn't need this level of saturation. What I think this franchise could have done this franchise a lot of good would be the, you know, the, you know, like God of War. You know, they release a new God of War game and it's an event,
right? It's special.
That's how it should be with, exactly, that's how it should be with Assassin's Creed. I shouldn't be, oh, there's this year's Assassin's Creed.
I wonder where they're gonna go next year. Well, it's like National Lampoon's Vacation at this point.
Yeah. Yikes. Vegas Vacation was not fantastic. It had some good jokes.
It does have one of the best lines. I'll take some of the green and don't skimp on the blue. That shit's funny. Like that's the only funny part of that movie. And honestly, I might have gotten the colors backward because it literally doesn't matter.
I've seen it once, so I remember that line you're talking about. But
the first three are phenomenal.
They really are.
Vacation, Christmas. And European are, look, kids, Parliament, Big Ben. So goddamn funny.
And even the first Vacation where they're driving around with the dead, like the dead grandma in the back of the car. It's
unbelievably funny. Yeah, unbelievably funny. Fuck, God.
Moving on from
up,
Chevy Chase movies.
Roll them up, kid.
All right. See, now I'm going to imagine Chevy Chase starring in all the rest of these games.
Chevy Chase in Devil May Cry 4.
Chevy Chase is Dante.
I could see it. In his younger years, like it. Fletch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Who are you? Dr. Rosenberg. Who? Dr. Rosenpenis. You know me. Moon River.
So Devil May Cry came out. Devil May Cry 4 came out for PS3 and 360.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I learned about this is that this is not in that Devil May Cry remaster collection. I thought they were doing the first four.
Yeah,
just
three. No. This one, DMC Foe, as the cool kids say, is it's a weird one, man.
I didn't play it. The only DMC I played was the first one to conclusion and then the second one like for a little bit. And I never finished the second one, so I never messed with the third one and any of the rest.
The this one, I played through this one. I remember, like, because you're going after Dante. I forget the name of the character that you play. Like, it was largely forgettable. Like,
a shame.
It was okay. Like, it was a fun. Like, you can't argue that the Devil May Cry games are not fun. Like, when you're doing all the cool shit and, like, oh, I'm going to knock you in the air with the sword and, like, then the guns and, like, jump and do a thing and a this and a, whoa, that was cool. But, like, it's not enough. You know? Like, it's not enough to, like, maintain.
Yeah, I feel like it's got to be special, you know, because you look at a Devil May Cry and it's a very similar kind of game to, say, God of War.
Right.
Except God of War manages to stay special.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It really
and
does.
I'm kind of experiencing that in Bayonetta right now, where it's the game continuously keeps me entertained by just how absolutely ridiculous it is. And I remember the first Devil May Cry doing a lot of that too. Like just the kind of stupid shit you'd pull off in that game
yeah,
as Dante
fun.
Would It was fun. And I felt like Devil May Cry 2 was very similar to Beautiful Joe 2, where like, okay, this is kind of just more of the same. And please forgive me if I'm wrong. I'm more close to Beautiful Joe than I am to Devil May Cry, but I do remember like a lot of people hate. Not true. A lot of people hate DMC 2, and I don't know if it's because it's just kind of bland, like it's not really much of a sequel, similar to Beautiful Joe 2, where it's just more like, well, here's more Devil May Cry.
Yeah, it felt more like an expansion.
Or is it just bad?
I think if looking at Devil May Cry 2 objectively, it was just more of a letdown. Like it's not arguably a bad game. It does have one of the biggest problems I've always had with the Devil May Cry games is the camera has never been great. And in a game like this, where it is so chaotic and there's so much going on and so many enemies and you're trying to do all this cool shit, if the camera isn't good, that's like a huge problem, like a massive, massive problem. And
that's similar to what I was talking about, Assassin's Creed. The first Devil May Cry, I give them a huge pass on it because if I remember correctly, there was nothing else like Devil May Cry before Devil May Cry. You know, that was like, that game came out and everyone was like, oh, this is what 3D Castlevania should be like. And like, not really, because 3D Castlevania shouldn't have guns, but still, it's that kind of action that, you know, I had not seen before. And I can't think of another game that was quite like Devil May Cry. Like, you know, since then you got games like Bayonetta and God of War.
Right.
But I think Devil May Cry was kind of like, let's kind of take this weird single camera Resident Evil thing, but make it a little more malleable and extremely action centric.
Right.
And it really did work. And obviously it had its kinks, but it was the first one of its kind. So.
Right. And Capcom certainly, like, had tried with that. Like, if you go back and look at the Onimusha games, which
yeah,
I love,
I guess that, yeah,
like they certainly were like kind of like the spiritual predecessor to Devil May Cry, because they were still that Resident Evil style game, but much more action heavy. You know, a lot quicker, a lot more swordplay and that sort of stuff. But then, you know, Devil May Cry came out and it was like, holy shit, like this is out of control. And like, you know, then you got Devil May Cry 2, which was just kind of an extension of it, and like Chaos Legion, which was like, that's a thing. That's a thing you did.
Like Otagi for Xbox.
Yeah.
For Sega.
You know, there were just a couple of things that didn't really hit. And then Devil May Cry 3 was great, and Devil May Cry 4, I think, had a lot more to live up to, because it was the, you know, the next gen one. It was the PlayStation 3 and 360 version.
Like they need to do something special with this.
Right.
And from what I've come to understand, they didn't.
I mean, it's got good reviews and people do like it, like enough to where people were disappointed that it was not on that re-release.
And that it was followed up by DMC, which is kind of a soft reboot.
Right. I really like that one, though. Honestly, I really
who was the
really
developer
like
on that? That wasn't
Ninja
Theory? That wasn't Platinum, was it? Oh, Ninja Theory. Okay.
Yeah. The Heaven
the
Sword guys.
Heavenly Sword, yeah.
Heavenly Sword and Enslaved.
Is that Vanquish too? I always get Vanquish and Enslaved confused.
Enslaved, definitely, which was super fun, which was the story of Sun Wukong and told in different time. Anyway, but like I don't know, this one, and maybe it's just me, maybe people really love this one more. I played through it, I enjoyed it, and then never thought about it again. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like no information.
Fair enough. So. Yeah, I don't really have much more to add on this one either. Much like the next one. Turok.
Turok was a rebooted thing that happened.
They rebooted Turok for PS3 and 360. I could talk for a while. Yeah, I don't think this really was a big deal, because I could talk about the N64 one, which was really cool.
Yeah.
But it just hasn't aged well. But
no,
at the time, it was really cool.
It was
this
really
one,
cool.
I don't I don't remember this doing particularly well in the store that I was working in. And I don't remember even being, because like I was a fan. I liked Turok from the N64 days. I did. And right, I should have been excited for this.
I liked all the old
PS3
comics.
And a 360.
I was all about them.
But yeah, this didn't do it for me. I think it just smelled so generic to me.
Yeah. I don't even think I ever played this one. I
could tell you for absolute certainty I did not play this game.
I'm almost positive I haven't. Just because, you know, I mean, looking at some scores for it, Metacritic has it as a 69 out of 100 for the 360 version, a 67 for the PS3, and a 65 for the PC. So again, it's in that.
Do you
like,
know how that, long this was from Evolution?
I don't.
Because Turok Evolution, I believe, was the... So Turok Evolution is a flaming pile of crap.
Right, right.
And it has one of the best things ever in it is the... I think it's Turok Evolution. And Electronic Gaming Monthly ran with this for years. Like there was a villain character that was just the laziest villain, Tobias Bruckner. And they used to give out every year the Tobias Bruckner Award for Excellence in the Field of Crapulence or something like that. It was just delightful. And so the Turok franchise was kind of in the toilet before this reboot.
Oh,
so,
sure. Yeah.
But I don't know if they had waited long enough to reboot it. Like, if this was a, like, Amazing Spider-Man to Spider-Man Homecoming situation where, like, you probably should have waited longer. Now, granted, that's a different situation, I guess, because I could not wait to get Homecoming in the MCU, and I thought Homecoming was amazing. But you know what I mean? Like, The feeling at first, even when they did Amazing Spider-Man, the feeling at first were like, you're rebooting this already? Like,
yeah.
This wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't. Enough time has not passed. I don't know if that's if that's the case with this one. I know that there was a sequel planned for this Turok that was canceled. And then the developer, Propaganda Games, eventually shut down. So, unfortunately, Chris, it appears that we're never going to get the conclusion of this story.
Well, damn. I'll just put this on the shelf next to Advent Rising and cry myself to sleep. This and Too Human and Advent Rising.
Yeah. I mean, because it's one of those things, right? Like, it's sitting here and, like, looking at the scores. Like, IGN has this as a 7.3 out of 10 as well. So this is kind of in the same vein as Altair's Chronicles. And like, you know, I mean, meh.
Yeah, this one gets a resounding meh.
It's kind of weird, too. Like, it calls into question the whole ranking system, right? Because rating something out of 5 is folly at best and should never be done again. It's dumb. Because, like, what is a 3 out of 5? Is that a 7 out of 10? Is that a 6 out of 10? Is it a 6.5? Is it a 7.5?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a dumb question that I wonder about. Like, these are things that keep me up at night. Out of 100 is a little bit better. Because then if you look at it, like, if we equate it a 7 out of 10 being a 70 out of 100, well, that doesn't sound nearly as good anymore.
Yeah,
7 out of
true.
10 sounds way better than 70 out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I feel like
it
we
does.
Should
but
we should really
just
push for the
equating to like grades in school, you know? I mean, the IGN scale, like every time they give out a 5 and people are like, "Oh, I guess it's a flaming pile of shit." They're like, "No, 5 actually just means it's an average game by our scale." Like I listen to a couple other podcasts and they always have to defend these scores that are like, we use the entire number scale because what a lot of things happen with the number scale, especially in the, you know, the 1 to 10 situations that anything, it was like the game has to be a varying degree between 8 and 10 to be considered anything even worth considering. And IGN really wanted to buck that trend by saying like, no, we're going to use the entire scale. If a game is a 4, that means it's better than a game that's a 3, but it's not quite a 5, which is still not bad. And I really, I appreciate that. as far as the rating scale goes. But really, when it comes down to it, like, looking at numbers is one thing, reading the reviews is quite another, which is why I checked to see who wrote that Assassin's Creed review, because
I'll
have very different opinions from a bunch of people on IGN staff or any other place where I read reviews. But, you know, some reviewers I tend to agree with more often than not, and Craig Harris was one of the people that his tastes seem to align with mine quite a bit.
Right. Well,
anyway,
Turok, anyway, it's a thing that happened.
It is. It had lots of green words on the front. It's a very green box. Anyway, speaking of green, the Xbox 360 was not home to a lot of JRPGs. In fact, that entire generation was not home to a lot of JRPGs. But Microsoft, and you got to give them all the credit in the world for this, Microsoft really wanted to break into the Japanese market with the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. So they went to a bunch of Japanese developers and tried to get them some RPGs on their system. Some genuine exclusive JRPGs. And they wound up with Eternal Sonata, which was possibly the most pastel game I've ever seen. Blue Dragon, which has the laziest Akira Toriyama artwork in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
And also I didn't particularly care for. I know it has its fans. And then you have this game, Lost Odyssey, which my ex-co-host on Waveback, she picked this for one of her episodes, and it had some really great music in it. It's very, very nice stuff.
Right.
This game might be the brownest RPG I've ever seen. And I've played Vagrant Story.
Wow.
Which was basically on papyrus, so.
It really was. I love that game, though.
But yeah, that's the thing. If I'm comparing this even visually to Vagrant Story had this style to it, and Lost Odyssey, to me, just, I never liked the look of it. It's, was this Mistwalker that did Lost Odyssey? Now I'm confused.
I think so. The main thing I liked about Lost Odyssey was they had some very cool camera angles during the battles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was kind of like a low, like, three-quarter worm's eye view of the battle taking place that looked really cool at times. And there was a lot of movement during the battles. Like, it was definitely not static. The monsters' designs are pretty cool.
There is it's no denying that this was a cool game.
Yeah.
I bought it, but I never got around to playing it because it was, again, it came at a time where it was like, well, I have this game and it looks interesting and it looks cool and it's from Mistwalker, who is cool. It's Mistwalker and Feel Plus actually developed this. Mistwalker was Hironobu Sakaguchi's development studio after he left Square.
Right.
And he also did, he was also involved in, this studio was involved with Blue Dragon, which I didn't care for.
Right.
And then they also did the excellent Last Story on Wii, which, quick side note, that needs to be remastered and re-released on Switch. There needs to be a Last Story HD. That game is criminally underplayed, even by me. I've barely played it, but what little I have, I really cared for. I thought this was really cool. And I'm sad that it has not gotten much recognition past the Wii. Granted, what are they going to do? Remastered for Wii U? I think not. But
right. Well, I mean, you know, looking at Metacritic for Lost Odyssey, it's sitting at 78 out of 100. Surprisingly, on the Microsoft review, it got a 5 out of 5. So,
I know this game is very well loved. Vicky loves this game. People love quite this. A bit. And I'm kind of surprised that it did not get a sequel in any way, shape, or form. But I guess I shouldn't be completely surprised, because Microsoft published this, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this was like you said, like their big push into, or trying to break into the Japanese market. And like, I'm looking at the numbers here, and it says it sold 109,517 units in Japan, which makes it the 9th best-selling game for the 360, which isn't good at all.
No. I mean, I guess by Japan standards, that's not terrible, but, I mean, that's not... I mean, let's see. Where are you getting that from? VG Charts?
No, from Wikipedia, because that's the only website I trust.
Now, how much did you say that one sold?
109,000. Like 109,517.
109.517. Now, I'm just waiting for VG Chess Logs. I'm curious how that stacks up against the last story, which was the Wii exclusive JRPG.
Right. Well, and
but
it was
just. Of
course,
VG Charts isn't loading.
It was also in a time. Well, your internet shit out again, I'm sure.
It's entirely possible.
It's also like one of those things where, like, there was a long period of gaming's history where JRPGs were the cock of the walk, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not the case anymore. Like, that is just not. And not just here in America, but kind of worldwide, it is not the preferred style of game right now.
Yeah, they've carved out their own niche where games like Bravely Default do very well for themselves.
Sure.
But you know, they're still not where they were. You know, they're not going to reachieve that Final Fantasy VII layer of ubiquity.
There I mean, they're just not. And like,
yeah,
I mean, I would say that if this Final Fantasy VII remake that is coming out, if it ever comes out, sells half of the copies that the original Final Fantasy VII sold, it will be a smashing success.
I would agree.
Because it's just not the world we live in anymore. I mean, where we are right now is, you know, quick online multiplayer or mobile. You know, like that's just where we are right now. And I think we're starting to see a change a little bit back into some more story driven content and whatnot, just with some of the things that are coming out recently, but it's still not anywhere near what it was. I mean, if we have listeners that are young enough to not remember the heyday of the Japanese RPG, you know, and I'm talking like mid-90s kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're talking
like,
the
I mean,
end
it
of
was,
Super Nintendo, beginning of PlayStation. Like,
it was
PlayStation
everything.
Getting Final Fantasy VII was such a big get. Like,
there
was a huge blow to Nintendo.
But, I mean, there was so much. I mean, when you had games like Ark the Lad that were selling millions of copies, you know, and maybe not millions, I might be making that up, but like, hugely popular games that are worth a lot of money now, and you know, just crazy stuff. And it's just not the world we live in.
The last story on Wii sold just 112,000. That's in Japan.
Yeah,
it doesn't really seem to be. It looks like it sold 0.67 million worldwide.
Right, so
this chart is reading weird, but
670,000 copies.
Yeah, 670,000 copies worldwide. I guess that's not terrible. It did all right, but probably not. Well, again, that's a podcast for another podcast talking about the budget for Last Story and all that jazz. But well,
anyway,
you know, Lost Odyssey should get, you know, the HD treatment if it hasn't already.
And maybe you know, this might be something that they look into when you know. Never mind. I'm not going to bash. Any Xbox fans right now.
Not right now, anyway.
No, next week.
Next week. We'll hold off. All right. So the last bit from 2008 is Lost Planet for PlayStation 3. Now I believe this had already been out on the Xbox 360 at this point.
Right. Yeah.
This is just the PS3 port of the super cool, get it, action game from Capcom.
I never got into this.
I didn't either, but I always thought it was cool. Like,
it looked like something I would be into. I prefer third-person shooters to first-person.
Yeah. It's Keiji Inafune. I mean,
I just never got into this one.
Same here.
It looks cool.
Same here.
The designs are cool. You know, and everything. This game has a very hardcore following as well.
It does, yeah. Boy, this was a while later. Let's see. Yeah. The 360 one was on January 2007. This was over a year later, February 26, 2008.
Yeah,
Xbox 360, especially at the beginning, man. Xbox 360 was kicking PlayStation 3's ass. It is so impressive that PS3 won that generation.
It really,
They managed to pull off the victory, like, just overall, is insane, because the 360 was huge.
Yeah, That's crazy. It really was. But, you know,
I know almost nothing about Lost Planet. The coolest thing about Lost Planet, to me, is that you can play as the giant robot in Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
Well, that is pretty cool.
She was awesome, man. You get this tag team thing. It's like, all right, you can pick this guy or this giant guy from, like, the muscle characters. Mm-hmm. You can pick one or the other, but they're the only characters you get. You don't get tag team now because you're this giant guy. That game was so good. Tatsunoko versus Capcom was great.
Well, and, like, what's interesting here about Lost Planet, looking again at Metacritic, Xbox 360 version, 79 out of 100. So that, I mean, you know, you're sniffing an 80. That's pretty good. But the PlayStation 3 version, 67 out of 100. So a full 12 points less.
Yeah.
And I mean that.
Well, I know there were a lot of ports that were like that, that didn't, you know, necessarily do as well on the PlayStation. They didn't port as well over. Particularly, you know, I think like the Orange Box, Bayonetta is another one. When I was interested in playing Bayonetta when it first came out, I kind of wanted to play on my PS3. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like it was right for PS3, but I was like, nah, you've got to avoid the PS3 version.
Yeah.
It's just crap. And that's kind of a shame.
And it's so weird, too,
but they clearly, like, got past that.
Like, they were able to do The Last of Us.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They clearly got past it. Like, whatever the problem everyone was having was, they got over it because, you know, the PlayStation 3 eventually just got a bunch of great games and the ports were good and,
yeah,
you know, yay.
Well, Lost Planet. Whatever.
Yeah, Lost Planet. It was a game. And it's time for us to take a break. So we are going to take a break, like I just said. I am very tired. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some super, super cool stuff and Gex Enter the Gecko. You're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekgate.com. Stick around.
And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, for Creators Month at Geekade, special guest me joined Chris and Matt to talk about some of our favorite creators of video game-inspired music. We listened to tracks by Megaran, The Flopatron, Brentalfloss, and more. You haven't heard, and trust me when I tell you this, you have not heard Donkey Kong Country 2's Snaky Shanty till you've heard it played on a fucking kazoo. Don't believe me? Check out the Waveback Podcast, episode 51, Creators Month Special, starring me.
Dan Ryan. Not for nothing. Still, favorite part of that episode was listening to you guys laugh at that kazoo track. I included that at the end as like an outtake after.
It was just so unexpected. So very, very unexpected. I have no idea what I thought it was going to be, but I can promise you that kazoo would have been the very last thing on my list.
Especially to be played so brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
Next, continuing the trend for Creators Month, my wife Karen decided to write about some creators she's only recently come to appreciate. She's never been much of a fan of visual art, but lately she's come across some by some fantastic geeky women that really speaks to her. Find out all about some great female artists and how you can support them in art appreciation, located in the think tank.
Then, Geekade's newest writer, Ernie Rockelman, has some fantastic news for horror fans. The late lamented Fangoria, beloved by all as the indie and industry standard of genre magazines, is returning, Chris.
Yay.
Do you have your subscription in?
I do not. Not that I'm not a fan of Fangoria. That yay was more out of tiredness than like I had my eyes closed at the time, but I tried to excitedly say yay, and that's just what happened. I apologize.
Just like your veteran. Learn a little about its history and the journey it's taking to make its way back into the hands of the fans in Fangoria Fans Rejoice, located in the Think Tank.
You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com.
And we're back.
We are. We are so back.
We're back and front.
So let's head back, now that we're back, to 1998 and talk about the whole two games that I was able to come up with that came out in February of 1998 that were worth talking about.
Can we talk about the second one first?
You know what? I don't know which one I dislike more.
Really?
We're talking about the PlayStation port here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Still.
All right, let's talk about the second one first. Gex Enter the Gecko for the PlayStation.
Ugh.
Ugh.
Gex. How did this become a thing?
Well, I mean, the first Gex was like the 3DO thing, right? Like, that was the 3DO game, was the original right. Gex, and then it eventually got ported to other stuff, too.
Sure. Right,
let's see. It was on 3DO yeah. in April of 95. Yeah, then it was on PlayStation like by the end of the year. So, you know, it was exclusive for a couple of months on 3DO, but this was like it was a 2D platformer in the age of PlayStation and, well, 3DO technically and Saturn where everything needed to be 3D. So yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. The first Gex wasn't a terrible game. Enter the Gecko though really bugged me. It just bothered me. And there's somebody out there that really wanted me to give this game a serious shot. Somebody, oh, who was that? Oh, I'm drawing a blank. Somebody has talked to me about giving Gex Enter the Gecko a serious shot.
No. It's terrible.
Gex Enter the Gecko. This was so like just straight off the bat, I never even wanted to try this game because the cover is like a play on James Bond. And I'm like, right. Whatever. Right.
And if it's not going to be James Pond, fuck you with your then, James Bond
yeah,
comparisons.
Then I'm out.
Right?
Give me James Pond any day.
RoboCop.
I love the first James Pond on Genesis. I freaking love that game.
So
let's see. This one wasn't even on 3DO. I guess 3DO was dead by this point. That's kind of funny.
Oh, shit.
It hit on PlayStation on February 24th, N64, 2 days later. Oh, no, a year and 2 days later. Jeez, didn't hit N64 until 99. Oh, wait, that's Europe.
Far too early.
That's Europe. Never mind. It was February 98 for PlayStation, August 98 for N64, Windows, September 30th, 98, Game Boy Color, December of 98.
Ugh.
Jesus, what was the Game Boy Color game like? And it didn't come out on Saturn.
Even for a PlayStation 1 game, it looks bad.
Yeah, it's not an attractive game. It's very, I don't know, man. Gex's thing was that he could like go in and out of TVs, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't have like rights to any actual TV stuff. So it was like, it would be going in and out of these like bad puns.
Yeah. No. Fuck
yeah,
everything
big,
about
big
this.
Big old bag of nope.
What's
Let's
crazy
see. According
though.
To the Wikipedia page, Dana Gould worked on the script for Gex Enter the Gecko.
Not his best work.
No.
You know what's even crazier about that?
What's
that? The developer of Gex Enter the Gecko. Fucking Crystal Dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
They got way better.
They did. Well, they've gone through a lot, right? Didn't they, like, I think there's some relation to Eidos there. Are they owned by Square now?
Yeah. They make
part
the
of that
Tomb Raider.
Eidos
they make
thing?
The Tomb Raider games.
That's right. Yeah.
Which are
yeah,
great.
Yeah, these guys got better. Well, you know. Everyone's
I mean,
gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, but like fucking Crystal Dynamics, man. It is a weird list of games that they have put out. Like I'm just going to give you a couple here. So Crash and Burn for the 3DO, Off-World Interceptor, which you probably remember a little bit, the 3DO version of Samurai Showdown.
Oh, that was excellent. Yeah. That's a great version of Samurai Showdown. Before we got arcade straight arcade ports, like, and the no compilations, 3DO one was awesome. Uh-huh.
But then Pandemonium, right? It's terrible. Akuji the Heartless.
I did not get this game at all. Oh.
Terrible. But then...
Tell me these guys did Ninja.
Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver.
Yes.
And I know how you feel about that.
Loved Soul Reaver.
Soul Reaver 2, Blood Omen 2, Legacy of Kain Defiance.
Whiplash.
Whiplash. I mean, and then they were given Tomb Raider and chucked out a bunch of, like, relatively average Tomb Raider games. And then with the reboot on PS3 and 360 and now the PS4 stuff, like Rise of the Tomb Raider and the original and that Tomb Raider reboot are incredibly good games.
Yeah.
Well, once they got picked up by by Squeenix, out of control good. But like
indeed.
To go from Gex to Legacy of Kain with Akuji the Heartless in between, like, that's fucking weird, man. That is weird. A weird development history. Anyway, fuck this game. Enough talking about Gex.
So the other game from 1998 we have is the PlayStation version of the phenomenal X-Men Children of the Atom.
Now, remind me why I hate this version.
It's just slow. It's just really slow. I mean, I don't know if you hate this version. I hate this version. I adored this arcade game, and the Saturn version was pretty solid.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was before the Saturn was using that, you know, RAM expansion pack for, like, X-Men versus Street Fighter. So it was still superior to the PlayStation 1, but it wasn't, you know, the arcade game. The PlayStation version, I just remember playing it and hating it because it was so, so slow.
It was slower.
It just took
It still looked good.
Yeah, it still looked good, but, like, Street Fighter Alpha looked good. And Street Fighter Alpha worked, you know, Warrior's Dream still rocked the same art style, which I love from this entire era of Capcom arcade games.
Right.
But it just didn't play, it didn't feel good to play this game on PlayStation. It just did not feel good. And it made me sad, because I wanted to be able to play this game at home, because I didn't want to have to keep going, you know, ask my parents to take me to the damn mall so I could play X-Men Children of the Atom.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember hating it. I remember being, like, a little disappointed by it, but then kind of adapting to play it slower, you know? Because,
well,
like,
the thing was that, you know,
I didn't really have many other options.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Street Fighter is that it still played like Street Fighter. No matter what it looked like, even on Super Nintendo,
right,
it still played like the arcade version. You know, it still felt right. And this one, I feel like they concentrated too much on making it, you know, just copying that art style and making those sprites run on the PlayStation, and it just didn't get the feel of it right. I did not care for this version of this game.
Because it was a pretty game.
It was. It's Children of the Atom was just so freaking cool, man. Especially for us fans of the old Fox cartoon, where they had the same voice actors from the Fox cartoon reprise their roles in this video game, which is so amazing to me. I love it. And the game clearly has no connection to that show because
not at all.
Psylocke's in it, and she's barely more than a cameo in that series. And
right. But it also
has Silver Samurai
which is always good.
Really? I mean, it's not always good. The Wolverine, remember the Wolverine?
I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
I didn't need to.
You didn't need to. Silver Samurai was in that. It was weird. Mm. So Children of the Atom, great arcade game, not a great PlayStation game. Mm. So that wraps it for 1998. Let's move back to 1988. And boy, we got some winners here. 1988 saw the arcade release of Altered Beast here in America.
I cannot even properly convey how much I love that stupid fucking game.
We've talked about it a lot on this show. We love Altered Beast.
It's so awesome.
In particular, the arcade version. It's such so a quarter great. Muncher. But it looks and sounds so fantastic. I love the art direction in this. It's just awesome.
Which was your favorite, right? So you had the wolf, the dragon, the bear, the tiger, and then the golden wolf.
The dragon.
The dragon?
The dragon was definitely my favorite. I loved that move where he would just, the electricity move that just went all around him.
Yeah, that was cool.
I love that stage. I love that boss. That was my favorite boss in the game, too. The eyeball plant thing was so awesome.
That was very cool. I love the bear.
I've always thought was just so silly because the way he spit that little thing that turned things into stone.
He's so weird.
He's so weird.
He's so weird. I loved it.
I just wanted to hug him. Like, all the other ones look badass, and he's adorable. He is a giant teddy bear. He is not ferocious in the least.
No.
And, like, you know, here's the attack for bear.
I think that's what I love about it.
The bear turns things to stone and rolls into a ball and jumps around. Like,
oh, it's fabulous.
Makes zero sense.
Everything about that is awesome.
You know what else kind of bugs me about Altered Beast? Like, this is a retroactive thing I didn't notice when I was a kid, but I notice now.
Uh-huh.
The only one of those transformation scenes that has animation is the first one.
Yeah, it's the wolf, yeah.
Yeah, all the rest of them are just like, they start just flashing back and forth between the pictures until you're the other thing. Like, damn it. That animation into him turning into the wolf is awesome.
Oh, it's so cool.
That whole game is so cool. It is objectively not a good game.
It's horrible.
It's so cool, it makes up for its lack of good gameplay. It's just that damn cool.
It's horrible. However, I adore this game. Absolutely adore it. Always did.
It had that right thing. It really did. And I'm glad that the PlayStation 2 reboot never came here to America because it looks awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as we've both said on the show, the Game Boy Advance sequel is freaking great. It's ugly as sin, but it's great.
It's the weirdest thing.
And it proves that there is a good game to be had made with this gameplay.
Because there really is.
Idea of this, of a slow-paced, auto-scrolling brawler, is not intrinsically flawed.
You
can make a good game out of it. I do. I want more too. I want someone to take this and run with it. I want a really talented studio. I want Drinkbox to do this one.
Yes. Yes.
They would be really good at this.
Make it happen. Fuck, make this
can you
happen.
You imagine a fighting system as deep as Guacamelee's, except not with the Metroidvania elements of it's just this.
I see, you know how I feel about Drinkbox, though. I want them to make everything.
That's
true. I really do. I just...
I want them to make Madden.
Yeah, Madden, Drinkbox. They'll do it right. Oh, God. I fucking love Altered Beast. I love the arcade one. It was just... Man, like, that first time popping into the arcade and, like, it sounded so different than everything else.
The sounds. Rise from your grave.
So brutal and like
the crashing sounds in particular, you know, like anytime like one of the zombies was busting out of the rocks and so good.
And that first time, man, like there are a few games that had arcade moments like that for me, like Mortal Kombat. Seeing Mortal Kombat for the first time was like
seeing Goro for the first time in particular.
So crazy, so crazy. But like the first time watching some, you know, greasy-haired fucking slacker teenager, because, you know, I'm old, like, playing this game in the arcade. But, like, watching that animation for the first time of, like, you're fucking wolf now? What?
Yeah. And, like, so they do that, and then almost immediately after that, you get, welcome to your doom. And then this giant, hideous, amazing monster shows up and starts throwing faces all over the place. Like, it was so weird and so brutally awesome. God, it was so incredible.
The second level with the fucking, just, like, globs that would suck onto you. It was so fucking and weird.
You, the way they looked when you kicked them, and they like looked like you're kicking a beanbag chair. It was so awesome.
Altered Loved Beast it. Rules.
It really does.
God damn it. It's the best.
Mm. More good stuff from February of 1988. We got the ultimately perfect, the just wonderful, amazing Contra for NES.
Oh.
Going back, this is one of those situations like Rygar, where it's like you go back and play the arcade game and think, nah, I'm good. I would rather play the NES game.
I would rather play the NES game.
It's good. It's so, it still holds the test, holds up just phenomenally well. The original NES Contra is just a masterpiece. That game is so good.
It's perfect. It's perfect in every way.
Yeah, I mean, like, even its flaws are perfect. Like, it is, it's hard in just the right way. It looks good. The music is incredible. The weapons are great. And the shitty weapons, like, you want to avoid. But that's great. Mm-hmm. Like, oh no, you got the flamethrower. Like, sorry. Shit. Sucks to be you.
Kill yourself now. Get a different weapon.
Gotta get that spread gun.
Gotta get the spread gun or the machine gun. Either way.
Yeah, machine gun's good. Spread gun is, you know, easier to beat it with, obviously, but...
Well, sure.
And then you have, like, the laser, like, the fuzzy laser that's, like, it's awful, so but weird. It is so powerful.
Yeah.
Like, it just destroys it so much damage. But you gotta be able to, like, be good with it. And you've got, like, the whole game is about mashing buttons, but if you mash buttons with the laser, you're screwed, because every time you press the button again, the laser disappears and starts over again, which makes no sense.
No, that's not how lasers work.
No.
Well, actually, it kind of is how lasers work.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Like, they just kind of go until you turn them off. So if you're, like, just clicking... Actually, that's perfect. Never mind. I take it all back.
Yeah, but it's not still connected. It's like the blasters in Star Wars. It's, like, it's no longer connected to your gun. So it's not even really a laser. It's, like, an electricity gun or something. It's fucking ridiculous. It doesn't matter. Yes. It's Contra, and it's awesome. It's so awesome.
If you could use the laser effectively... In the vertically, scaling levels, like when the things would open up on the side, like the boxes, you'd just wreck those.
Yeah, just the, you're absolutely right.
So
good old fuzzy laser.
Fuck, I love Contra.
Contra's great. Super Contra's great. Contra Through the Alien Wars is one of the best action games ever made.
It really
Contra
is.
Contra 4 is awesome. Most of the other Contra games are kind of garbagey. Contra Hardcore is great.
Neo Contra, I still like that one.
Yeah, it was all right. That's Samurai. That was weird.
Yeah, that was weird. But god damn it, this first Contra, like, man, god damn it, we've talked a lot about Contra and our love for Contra.
Yeah, we have. All right, this next one's all you, Dan, because I have played very little of this game. The next game here is TNC Surf Design for NES. The bulk of my experience with this game is Steve Costanza, my first boss at my first Funko Land. He was teaching me about collecting NES games, and he said, you got to pick up the really easy ones, like, just to fill in the blanks, like Silent Service and TNC Surf Design.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked up TNC Surf Design, and it's got a little tiki dude and a gorilla on the front. And mm-hmm. I've played it like twice, and I was very confused by it, and I moved on to other things. I know you love this game, though.
I do love this game. It's hard. It's so hard. It's so unfair. The level design is garbage. The surfing is almost impossible. It basically equated to...
What do you do in this game?
Well, you skate, and then you surf, and then you skate, and then you surf as a different character. And then that's kind of it. I mean, that's really it. It basically equates to the skating sections basically equate to like a poorly designed hover bike level from Battletoads. Like, you have to, like, memorize the course. Like, there's really not much else to do. Like, you're not fighting shit, you know, you just but it's so fucking poorly designed, and the hit detection, like, there's sections of the skating where there's big fucking holes in the street that the cool surfer and skater dudes put ramps in front of. But, like, you had to hit the ramps just perfect to be able to, like, go over the thing. Like, you couldn't skate around the fucking hole. Like, you would fall in the hole every time. It's horrible. But I loved it. And I have no idea why. I loved the way it looked. Like, there were...
It is a nice-looking game. It's very bright. It's very colorful.
It's very bright. It's very ridiculous. The character designs were cool. Thrilla Gorilla's awesome. The fucking cat in the... or the dog in the suit was kind of awesome. Tiki Dude on the skateboard. Like, it's a really odd skateboarding game. And an odd surfing... The surfing was always where shit would fall down, though. Because, like, I never figured out the fucking surfing when I was a kid. I had no idea what the hell to do. I couldn't pull off any tricks. It was just like, okay. I guess I'll go back and play the first level again. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just go back and do this because it's fun. But...
What did you think of the sequel?
I never even played the sequel.
I haven't played it either. I know I have it. And I'm watching a YouTube video of it right now. It's a very nice-looking game.
Yeah, I never even played it. I never, because like it the surfing sections frustrated me. So, you know, when I saw the the big waves, it was like, no. I'll stick with the street skating. Cause like if I remember correctly, there were a couple different versions you could pick from. Like you could pick skating, you could pick surfing, or you could pick both. Yeah, like, so my cousin and I usually just stuck with the skateboarding. Like, it was fun, you know, like, we would fuck around and, like, try to see who could do the coolest run through the level of, like, oh, I can do a grind here, and, like, you know, oh, that was sweet, you know, and, like, try to really, like, we made a game out of the game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna try and do it this way and jump over this thing and take this run through it, like... And it kind of developed into the way that, like, he and I would then go skate, like, out in the world when we got a little older. Of, like, we would go to a skate park and be like, all right, I'm going to do this line. Like, I'm going to pop here and do this trick and do this grind and then off here and over here. You know, and, like, a lot of that kind of developed in the way we used to play games back in the day. Of, like, I'm going to do, here's the world that I'm in and I'm going to try and do this with it versus what you're going to do. And we're just going to try to make it look cooler. Yeah, it was a weird-ass game. I have no idea what town this is either. Like, they really, really need to invest in their infrastructure.
Yeah, their roads fucking, are really...
Their roads are horrible. Like, who's driving on these? I don't understand.
No one. There's too many cones everywhere.
There's too many tiki men doing skateboardy tricks.
All right, so the last game we'll talk about tonight is an old favorite of mine, is Gunsmoke for NES.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great arcade port, because you know, the arcade game is, if I'm remembering correctly, it's more or less the same. The NES game's just, you know, more of that, except not designed as much around being a quarter muncher.
Right. Made it a Gunsmoke, little easier.
Yeah, I feel like you didn't see too many games like this, because, like, you did and you didn't, because this was basically a scrolling shooter, like a shmup, like, you know, R-Type or Gradius or something. It was like the top, you know, top view scrolling one, except you weren't a spaceship or a plane like 1942. You were just a dude. You were a cowboy, and it scrolled automatically, and you moved around just like that, and you shot and murdered everything.
Yeah, and, like, this was a very popular style of game on the NES. I mean, you had Akari Warriors and Commando.
Guerrilla War.
Guerrilla War. Well. Like, there was a ton of games like this, and they were fun.
Yeah, the ones we're talking about, they weren't auto-scrolling, right? Like, I remember Guerrilla War wasn't auto-scrolling.
Mm-mm.
Like, it was a similar kind of thing, but, you know, Gunsmoke was, like, it kept moving no matter what. But one of the things that really sets Gunsmoke apart is that you
could ride a horse.
Well, yes, you could ride a horse, but it was also the way you shot was always on that diagonal. Like, the only way to shoot straight ahead of you was by pressing both buttons. So you had the A button and the B button, and the A meant that you shot diagonally to the right, and the B was you shot diagonally to the left. And it was such a cool wrinkle, because it just, you know, most of those kinds of shooters, you're, you know, doing various versions of shooting straight in front of you, and this was like you were always kind of coming at every, you always had to come at everybody from an angle. And the game was really well designed around that, because you had, like, you know, you'd be walking through the main street of an old west town, and so people would be like coming out of the windows to shoot at you, so you'd always have to be shooting off to the sides anyway. So it was just a really smartly done game. It's very, very cool. It was very cool.
It had very cool bosses too.
Oh, it did, like, too. Every level started with a wanted poster.
Yeah, you were trying to collect the ransom, like, because you were the sheriff.
Yeah, so you're out, like, you know, you'll get the bounty on this guy for whatever the heck, dollars. And, like, every stage started with, you know, this is this boss. So you get this really cool, like, cartoon drawing of a guy with a wanted poster. And then you'd finish the level, and, like, the wanted poster, like, a bunch of gunshots would go through it or something. It was very cool. And, like,
and the boss fights were pretty
the
cool.
Bosses.
And
there was, like, the Native American dude who would, like, throw fireballs at you. He was a bitch. There was a cowboy
hold
guy.
On, I'm getting here. Round one, because there were 10 rounds through the game. So, and the money increased, obviously, as you went through. So the first one, you had the master, who fought with a Winchester. Then you had Roy, who fought with a knife. The ninja, obviously, in the Old West, who fought with darts. I mean, everybody knows that.
The ninja darts. In the Old West, I remember that.
Yeah. Then you had Cutter, who was super cool, who had the boomerang, which was a fun boss fight.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Pig Joe, who threw the dynamite at you. And then...
Oh, that guy. Jesus. Wow.
Yeah, he was
bringing this
back. He was a pain in the ass. The Wolf Chief had the shotgun. Mm-hmm. Then there was Goldsmith, who had double rifles. He was fucking hard. Los Pubro, who had a double pistol, was also, like, the game was relatively easy up until you got to, like, level seven.
Mm-hmm.
Los Pubro had the double pistol. Fat Man had the machine gun. He was, mm-hmm. like, the mafia boss, right?
I think so. I don't think I got that far.
And then the final one was the Wingate family. So there was a couple of them, and there was a machine gun and a rifle.
That's right. The only way I was able to get that far was with Game Genie. I think the furthest I ever got by myself was the level where you've round seven. I think that's the farthest I was ever able to get as a kid, you know, on my own volition.
Yeah.
We did eventually get a Game Genie and beat this.
Yeah. Well, and, like, that was the arcade version of it, which is the way that I've played it the most, like, through an emulator. The NES version had...
The NES one ended at stage six. That's
had
right.
Had only six, yeah.
That's right. Okay, so it was Fat Man Joe. Yeah, I never made it to Wingate in the NES one. That was
okay.
I made it to Fat Man Joe, and then I made it to Wingate with the Game Genie, and I got to this whole Wingate family thing when I eventually played this on an arcade compilation where I had infinite quarters. That's what happened.
Regardless... There was a fucking ninja in an Old West game, Chris.
Darn right there was.
It's a weird game. I do like Gunsmoke. It's a very cool game that I think, like, of all the games on our list this week, like, this is the one that you should seek out and play.
Yeah,
it's very fun.
Yeah, definitely seek out and play Gunsmoke. This game is really, really great.
Like, you should play this, and then you should play Sunset Riders.
Yeah, Sunset Riders is good.
Because that's, like, the next Capcom Western game, and it's way better than Gunsmoke. And I like Gunsmoke, but Sunset Riders is fucking dope. It's so good.
That hit the... Sunset Riders was Konami.
No, it was Capcom. Or no, you're right, it was
I'm
Konami.
Looking, yeah, I'm looking at it.
Son of a
Konami.
Bitch. I thought that was Capcom. God damn it. See? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Show invalid.
It's a fucking delete it. I haven't been. I'm not recording anyway.
Should I recording?
Should I be recording this? Oh, man, there's a ton of ports of Gunsmoke, too. Like, I'm just looking now. There's MSX.
Yeah, that came on everything. I think there's a... Is there a Let's Compare on that? TCN on YouTube.
I'm sure there is.
Great Let's Compares of games. Let's compare.
There was an Amistad CPC version, except it was called Desperado.
Yes, there's a Let's Compare for Gunsmoke. Let's see which one. Gaming History Source does these great Let's Compare videos. And, boy, how many do they cover in this? Looks like they cover the arcade, ZX Spectrum, MSX, Amstrad, C64, NES, Atari ST, Amiga, Windows, and Saturn, PlayStation from Capcom generations. And that's where I played the one with Infinite Continues, was the Saturn, PlayStation, Capcom generations. Oh, good times. Good times. Yeah. I love me some Gunsmoke.
Cool game. Fun
Very
game.
Cool game. The NES one, it even has the same style of box art as the classic Mega Man debacle. It's that, you know, weird neon checkerboard floaty thing in the background.
It's not great.
Yeah.
It's not
I'm
great.
I'm nostalgically connected to it, but not...
But it's terrible.
Yeah, it's very... It's 80s and not the greatest of ways, but...
Yeah. But it also in the best of ways.
Agreed. Well, there it is, guys. That is the 10-20-30 for February 2018, and that was a lot of fun. That was that went better than I thought it was going to after looking at this list of games.
They always
now I
do,
really
Chris.
Want to go play Gunsmoke because Gunsmoke was awesome.
It really was.
So that's it. Join us next week when we will be giving the Switch its report card. It's been out. It's as of tomorrow. It will have been out for a year, so Dan and I are going to put some thought into things and see how we feel about several different categories and give it a proper report card. How did the Switch do in its first year, and what is the rest of the, what does the future of the Switch look like to us?
And we're going to go back and listen to how wrong Chris was last
year. Oh, that's right. Oh, I'm so glad we put this off for a week because I said I was going to do that. Oh, my God, I have to do that. All right, because I was wrong. I was every level of wrong. Man, I was so
I feel
angry.
Like I was totally right.
I'm going to listen to that episode tomorrow. Boy, while I'm working in my garage, I'm going to put that on and listen to that episode tomorrow. That's going to be fun.
Send me notes so I don't have to listen.
I will send you notes. It will be awesome. I'm going to talk to Evan about editing in bits of me being very angry about things. It's a good thing I have no shame. Anyway, so that's going to be it.
That's right.
See you then. Yeah. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS, and Dan, you are available at...
Also at Geekade Chris. It's really weird. Our messages keep getting mixed up.
They really do. We're indistinguishable. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd also like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp or his website, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh, original content. I am so tired. I can't believe I said all that without tripping over my words.
No, that was great.
Except that
now I've got tape all over my face.
You know how it is. You go to a party, there's dancing, one thing leads to another. Now I have tape all over my face. That's everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.
You know what's cool? Tying your shoes is cool.